Episode 6, Part 1, The One Most Important Thing. This is your brain. This is your brain on screens. Any questions? So, if you want to give people a clue as to how old you are, open your podcast with the reprise of a 1980s Dare commercial. I would have included some egg-frying sound effects, except this season is all about a no-frills, minimalist approach to podcasting. Mic on the mic, no more, no less. So this is a two-part episode. This is part one, and I tackle one of the thorniest questions about well-being, and then we segue into part two, which is the story of my recent digital detox. But before I get into that, I want to step back and explain how we got here to a 1980s Dare commercial reference and Mike on the mic about to regale you with the digital detox play-by-play. At a couple of points in my career journey, when I've opted for big time pattern interrupts, I've had this unique opportunity to truly step into the thought experiment of designing my ideal livelihood, top to bottom. Of course, it never comes true, but I think the exercise has been pretty useful nonetheless. And one of the ways it's useful is it provides you something very fundamental if you're paying attention. It's this. There literally is no such thing as ideal. Every pro has embedded within it a con. This duality is built into the physics of life. The best you can do is optimize for fit with you as an individual and then just do what it takes to try to maintain some level of balance. Like working from home, as an example, it can be great. No commute, tons of convenience, but it opens you to home distractions. If it tips too far, it can be isolating. And this is saying nothing about the pros and cons to team and organizational performance and innovation and cohesion and well-being, et cetera, et cetera. Another example is moving into leadership. So many people earlier in their careers aspire to work their way up. There's more money. There's more ability to make an impact, to be a part of influential decisions. And yes, and you trade many things off in the process, like how often the further up you go, the more disconnected you get from the direct frontline impact, or you may be taking on a bunch of new pressures that you didn't fully appreciate. The challenge is the sets of trade-offs we make turn out to be a lot more complex and nuanced than we usually realize. And this is especially true when it comes to how it all impacts your well-being. At any given moment, you may be trading off work-life balance for greater responsibility and the opportunity to have more influence, or you're sacrificing a sense of purpose for pay, or vice versa. It's not that all these things are necessarily contradictory. It's that in any given situation, usually there's some degree of push and pull. And sometimes what happens is you hit a period where your well-being isn't at its best, and you start to wonder, what's going on here? Do I need to make a change? Or maybe I just need to grin and bear it, since there's no such thing as a perfect situation. Maybe things are just going to pass on their own. I find this to be especially difficult or confusing for people, which is when things are fine, but not fantastic. A lot of people slip into feeling guilty that they're even wishing for more. You know, it's a, I have so much, why can't I just be happy or satisfied with this? And then they proceed to do mental gymnastics to convince themselves that they're being ungrateful and that they just need to suck it up. If you ever find yourself having internal debates like this, this is a fantastic cue that it's time to pause, take a step back, and make sure you're asking the right questions and that you've widened the aperture. Let me explain. So first, quick story. During my stint as a full-time personal trainer, I used to love standing around shooting the breeze with a few other personal trainers who were between sessions with clients. And the gym that I was working in had a situated right by this row of ab crunch machines, which tended to be a lot of people's last stop in their workout. And then they'd sort of saunter over, drift on over, and join the conversation. And I remember this one time, a woman came over after doing her crunches and she asked the trainer how much weight she should be putting on that machine to get the incredible abs that she wanted so dearly. That one? Over there? He asked. Yeah, she said. None. It's a waste of your time. Really? She asked. Well, what should I be doing instead? Sprints. No way. Yes way. She looked at him skeptically, didn't believe him. Laughed a little awkwardly, walked away. Definitely wasn't sold. One of the most common questions gym goers would toss over to the pool of congregating fitness instructors went like this. what's the one best exercise that I should be doing for fill in the blanks? Abs, butt, arms, whatever feature of theirs that they perceive to be lacking in some way. And I loved this question because it always launched the group into this fantastic debate. Everyone had an opinion. Sometimes a couple of people agreed with each other, but by and large, everyone's opinion was different. And everyone had a reason for shooting somebody else's answer down and asserting their own position. And occasionally, the gym goer standing by would point this out. They say, hey, clearly you guys don't know what you're talking about. You can't even agree amongst yourselves. Like they pulled some gotcha moment off in front of everybody. And the problem was, they weren't getting bad answers. It's a bad question. There isn't one thing you should be doing for any goal you can come up with in the gym, let alone any wellness goal. Want great abs? Sprints. More broccoli, less alcohol. Strengthen your core. You get the picture. The question denies the inherent complexity in a real, true answer. I've heard similar questions asked of wellness experts countless times in interviews. Some form of the question, if you could only recommend one thing, or if someone could only implement one practice, what would that be? And I'm sure the intent is to try to sniff out what somebody thinks is most important, or maybe it's just to wrap up an interview quickly. But the way the question is framed is meaningless. There isn't one most important thing in the abstract that applies equally to all people in all situations. Not only that, there isn't one thing. These aren't independent levers that you can rank order when it comes to the mental and physical health and happiness of a human being. You tug a string over here, it impacts another over there. Life as a human is a complex, interconnected web of stuff. So let's get back to what I was teeing up. Suppose there we are, not feeling our best when it comes to well-being and fulfillment in our work, and naturally we start looking at what we need to fix. This is where I say, first things first, make sure you ask the right question. For example, question I despise so much, what's the one thing for well-being? What if we reframe it and ask ourselves a slightly different question? What's the next most important thing that I should be doing for my well-being? To me, this question has meaning. This is a question that I can work with as a coach because it acknowledges that there are lots of drivers and it hits at the fact that you shouldn't try to pursue all of them at once. And it honors the fact that the answer is personal to you. Chances are there is something it makes sense for you to attend to next, and there's something different that's right for me to attend to next. So ask the right question and widen the aperture. Anytime my well-being is flagging in my work life, I know I need to take a step back and look at my well-being as a whole. Because in truth, there aren't these clean boundaries between these different aspects of your life. Just like how a stressful day at work comes home with you, it impacts your personal life. The rest of your life also impacts how you show up at work, how you feel at work. So if any of us is serious about truly maximizing our well-being in our work lives or anywhere else, the only honest way to go about this is to approach it holistically. Whenever I hit a low point, or even just a period of feeling a little stagnant, the first thing I do is I make sure that my fundamentals are in order. Am I getting enough sleep? Am I getting enough movement or exercise? Am I meditating consistently? Am I getting enough sun or outdoor time or time in nature? Am I eating healthy and being smart about the things that throw off my biology, like sugar or alcohol? It's amazing how many problems in life can be solved with a break, a sandwich, a nap, a jog. We lose the thread that the human being is just an animal. Tending to those parts of us may not carry us all the way to peak states of well-being, but they are certainly foundational. It's only after I'm honest with myself about the fundamentals that I start looking at the higher order things. And here, there are a few things that consistently seem to come up as big drivers of well-being. Connection and relationships. In the context of work, for sure, but also with friendships and loved ones. We are social creatures. So much of our well-being really comes down to a sense of belonging and love. Then there's the question of a sense of purpose. Like, do I have a project to pour myself into? Or the ability to serve others or serve something beyond myself? Then there's the desire for creativity, for autonomy, and the need for authenticity. To me, too little of any of these can have a profound impact on our sense of well-being. Now, my goal here isn't to be comprehensive with this. It's just to illustrate this notion of widening the aperture, of looking at things more holistically. Once you've really done an honest review of things. Then and only then does it make sense to come back to this question of, okay, this being so, where do I focus? What's the next most important thing? Maybe it's something big like finding a role that's more authentic to who you are. Maybe it's not. It's important to balance impact with likelihood of following through. And maybe it's something seemingly small that turns out to be a keystone. Sometimes something may seem small or not directly linked to what you believe is the core issue, but that seemingly small thing leads to a cascade of other changes. I saw this all the time with people who got into fitness, because fitness boosts mood, helps with sleep. People who exercise tend to eat healthier. The added confidence leads to a bunch of other positive actions they take in their life. Hence, it's a keystone. Everything that I'm sharing here is both personal and very fresh for me, because I quite literally just went through a well-being drought where many things were feeling out of alignment for me. And I went through that process that I just described. And I'll say there was unquestionably this desire to go after the bigger picture stuff. But I also saw that my fundamentals were not in check and that I needed to regain a certain degree of balance first. So staying true to my philosophy, it became very clear the next most important thing for me to focus on had to do with this 6-ounce mini computer that I take with me everywhere, better known as a cell phone. I realized right away that flushing it down the toilet wouldn't work. It's too big. I needed to try something else, a detox of sorts. Sometimes the need for a detox from screens comes at you in the form of signs. Signs like the moment you realize, I am sitting on my couch, watching TV, while listening to a podcast, while scrolling my phone, while somebody is actually trying to talk to me. Or nothing like having a young child tell you to put your phone down to conjure up copious amounts of shame. Or perhaps you're in bed, theoretically near transitioning into some much-needed deep and restorative sleep, were it not for the fact that you and your compulsive opposable thumb clicked on that icon that pulls up the most horrific events that happen on the planet that day, better known as news. So here's a question. Do you think I was capable of successfully going a week without my phone during a work week? What do you suppose happened? Well, I shall tell you in part 2, my digital detox.